Oh.
There we go. I think I'm getting it. Okay. Right. Where were we?
Sterling.
So it seems like we could maybe start with the stuff that you sent, Aaron.
Sure. Sure.
You're the only one who was on top of it.
Yeah, and clogging my email box.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's just the latest reason for it to be clogged up.
Do you guys want to start with the activities, or?
Well, actually, before we get too far, I don't know if anyone else read all the details about the conference. There's some date in the not-too-distant future where we have to send something into the organizers to prove that, I guess, we actually are presenting. So they asked for either a draft of a paper or slide drafts or something to that effect.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I don't remember the date off the top of my head. And I meant to... I don't know if any of you know... Are we writing a paper for this conference, or are we just giving a presentation?
Well, I thought, the literature review we have is somewhat of a start of a paper.
Yeah.
I don't know if they wanted us to be reporting on that stuff or, like, on our future plans for
Clean
Year. Maybe a little of both.
Yeah, I was thinking that it was maybe a little of both, but I didn't think that the literature review was going to be part of the conference proceedings. Like, I thought it was like a presentation and maybe there'd be like an abstract or something for the proceedings.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% sure on that.
And that's something, well, I can send an email to, I guess, Bob and just clarify.
So I found the email that Bob sent to us. So let's see here. It says, April 29 to May 28, responding to participants. No, where?
I'm not sure if it was in the email. It might have been on the website.
Oh, May 11th, in order for paper or panelist presenters to participate in the program, they must provide proof of a paper in progress and a short biographical sketch by May 11th
right.
to the session chair.
And I think the proof, it doesn't have to be the paper itself, but I'm...
Well, the session chair in this case is Bob, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Right?
Oh.
Right?
Do we have to provide him with something then? I wonder if...
Which should be relatively easy then.
Yeah.
Should we just check with him maybe?
Yeah. I can send him an email and just see what we need to do. Because I saw that and I said, oh, that's a month away.
Yeah, good idea.
But anyway, okay, after that, what were we about to do?
So I was wondering if we wanted to start with activities or start with our research goals.
Probably research goals, because then it will make sure our activities are guided towards our research goals.
Seems fair.
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know if you all had a chance to read what I sent out, but basically I was trying to address Sterling's questions. Right? And he was basically asking us, are we supposed to just reproduce stuff? Are we supposed to explain things that have come before us? Are we supposed to sort of be doing similar things to what came before us, but just offer a different perspective or maybe do things in a different way? And like after looking at our lit review, I basically felt like there's not really all that much that has come before us. And in particular, there's very little that's come before us that has what I'll call a deep theoretical, not a deep, but an in-depth theoretical perspective. And so I feel like what we're proposing to do on the face of it is both pretty original, but I think it can offer potentially some valuable contributions to both teaching and research. Right? Like if we come up with these new ways of doing things, even if we find out that they're failures, since we're using a Well, since we will be using a reasonably detailed framework, we'll hopefully be able to explain why we think they failed, and that's useful pedagogically.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do stuff and it turns out that it works really well, we'll be able to describe what it means to work really well, but also the components that we thought made it work really well, which will be useful pedagogically. And I think since very few people have really applied much of a theoretical framework to this area of research before, I think if nothing else, it'll be a sort of proof of concept that you can apply these ideas or these theoretical ideas to statistical reasoning. And maybe if we do stuff that produces something we like, then it can do more than that. But those are sort of my thoughts. I didn't know what your reactions were.
I liked what you wrote, and I was thinking it seemed like also something that hasn't necessarily been a more fine-grained analysis in some of that literature. So we have some like broad strokes for like what students have difficulty with in terms of sampling distributions, like through the Chance, Delmasson, Garfield paper, right?
Yeah.
Or Saldana and Thompson's paper. Those have been like two pretty big papers guiding the work that we've done so far. And it seems like by adding in some stronger theoretical foundations for mathematics education and going through these teaching experiment that we're hoping that we have a finer grain analysis and more insights into how these ideas develop rather than just what's difficult about them or like how we could support their development through certain kinds of instructional interventions. Does that seem fair? It seemed like that was what you were saying. So that seems very like original to me, not necessarily replicating previous research.
Yeah, I think so too.
I wish Sterling were here to see if we answered his question to his satisfaction. But he can, maybe.
I think if we're looking at things through that focus of trying to figure out like how the ideas develop, then it doesn't. I think it doesn't put as much pressure on us to develop like the ideal activity for students to do. Because we're not so much testing if the activity is working, but we're trying to see how they're learning it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's good.
Yeah, and I think the way we're seeming to set it up, we'll be successful even if we fail, so to speak.
Right.
Okay, and I my impression is when we talked last month, we had a pretty reasonable idea of the types of things that we would be doing, although we obviously need to flesh out a lot of the details.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I had a pretty good sense of what our broad research goals were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like that too, like we had converged onto something. Took us a while to get there, but we were sort of on one wavelength, I think, for our broader goals.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if anyone had a chance to look at that. There's a document called Phase Description.
Yeah.
That was in there. And,
yeah.
And that was, and one of the things we said we would do is propose a timeline, which you probably noticed I didn't actually do in there. But this was an attempt to see if this sort of matched up with what we thought if this would be something that would support our research goals. And we had talked about doing this, building simulations as a way to understand sampling distributions. So I guess the two questions are, do you think this is a place to start for designing a teaching experiment, and if we do use this sort of design, will it allow us to collect the types of data that'll help us answer our research questions?
I really liked the idea because the first two phases are strictly just hands-on and no computer involved.
Mm-hmm.
And even the third phase is like a computer, but computers acting like a hands-on activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the stuff that the literature always is saying that there's not that much evidence of help is actually in this phase four. And so we'll be, I think it'll be good in building the students' knowledge before they get to this kind of more controversial type activity, if we use applets or not. But I guess were you thinking, Aaron, anywhere in there we would use any sort of applets, or just do the, in phase three, use a random number generator, and then phase four have them designing their own simulations?
I guess I wasn't completely sure about what would happen in phase four. Like, the first three phases, at least in my head, they seem reasonably clear. At least I could come up with examples of things that they might do. And I'm not sure, did we ever converge on exactly what we meant by simulation?
I think that's one of the questions that we were sort of talking about last time that we needed to think and discuss through this time.
So maybe, should we talk about that now? Like, where, before we worry too much about the initial phases, like, where do we want the students to wind up?
Yeah, I guess somewhere in my head, I'm not convinced in the power of applets.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't thinking about them as part of them, as part of the activity sequence for them in terms of designing computer-based simulations, that phase four. And I think the reason for that is because I see the use of the applet as the student not really having to think through the process of building a sampling distribution and making some sort of decision. For instance, like, if, you know, if you're rolling a die as your simulation and maybe like one and two are representing something and then the other four numbers are representing something else, and then you're, you know, making some kind of count. Like, if a student actually has to decide what the tool is in that case, whether they're going to roll a die or, you know, create a spinner or something like that, and how they're going to divvy that up. I mean, it seems like if it's a 50-50, one through three, and then that they might have, that the student might have an easier time with that as opposed to if the weighting is different. And so it seems to me like the process of them having to think through what the design is going to be for the simulation and then what that process is looking like, that there's some power to that. And I don't have this clearly thought out in my head yet, but it seems to me that one of the problems with the idea of the applets is that it only makes sense when you already know what that process is and what that process looks like and what it and the data that you're collecting. And so to me, if anything, the applets would maybe come after. So when I thought about approaching phase four, it was somehow where they no longer had to, like, get out a spinner or dice or coins, but they had faith in, like, the random number generator of their computer, but they were still going to have to figure out what they were going to assign in terms of weighting to something. Or does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and let me see if I can, if this makes sense. So it seems like eventually we want them to be able to do some sort of programming. Like, if we want them to design their own simulation, they're going to have to at some level figure out, okay, here's what the probability distribution is, so I have to figure out some way to generate random numbers to map outcomes or to map numbers to outcomes in a particular way, and then collect those outcome data and summarize them in a particular way. And there's virtue in thinking of each of those steps, and the virtue comes through writing the program in some form that'll do it for you, as opposed to, and I think of there's one app that I've seen a bunch of times where you sort of draw your population distribution, and then you can click on a button that says sample once, or draw 1,000 samples, or draw 10,000 samples.
Mm-hmm.
And right, the benefit really comes not from clicking the button, but from programming the thing that lets you click the button.
Right.
Is that about right?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I think just to like add on to that, the one concern I have is how we create this so that it doesn't become about the programming language so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to be the key. I mean, I think we've had this conversation before about like maybe using R, there's a learning curve or something for students. Or so I'm not sure how to walk that line, but I don't want them to be bogged down in a particular programming language and feel like that all they're learning is
right.
is how to do that as opposed to like the process. So
I think it will probably help too if we have like maybe like phase 3.5 or something where we have them like rather than using actually at the computer writing the code is just having them write down or think through what they want the computer to do as if they were a computer. Because
mm-hmm.
then they can think, well, I want the computer to generate these samples, and then I want the computer to take the mean of each sample, and then we need to plot it somehow or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I like that idea.
Yeah, I like that idea
yeah.
a lot, Stacey.
And it seems like, I mean, not to jump too far afield here, that, Stacey, that you're almost proposing that what we really want is to write our own sort of programming language that's very high level and lets you make statements such as, like, you know, map this outcome or this number
yeah.
to this outcome.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, sort of transparent what we're trying to program. Because, yeah, I completely agree with what Jen was saying, that, like, I tried using Excel to have my students do simulations last semester, and I ended up having to do, like, one or two outside of class workshops just to teach them how to use Excel.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like Excel at all. I'm against Excel. All right. This is a side. Are any of you on that ISOSTAT mailing list?
No.
No.
There's it's for isolated statisticians. I should forward you the information on the email list. But someone recently posted that they are wanting to use Excel for their intro class, and then asked if there was any other suggestions, and it sparked this huge debate over Excel or no Excel.
Mm.
And actually, through that, I also learned that R has a new package called R Commander that's supposed to be a graphical user interface
mm-hmm.
and a lot easier to use, which I might try.
Yeah. And, you know, one idea, I have no idea. I don't know much about computers, but I'm wondering if how hard it would be for a computer scientist or someone who knows programming to actually write for us a program that would effectively be a simulation programming interpreter.
Hmm.
Right? So, like, and I'm thinking, how many different types of commands would one need to write a simulation? And it seems like not too many. Because, like, you can do a simulation in Excel using just a handful of commands in a random number generator and things like adding things up or averaging or whatever. And I'm wondering how difficult it would be to write like a Java applet or something that, you know, in which students could sort of still put it together by themselves, but it would be this very high level programming language where you don't need to worry too much about syntax and obscure commands and memory allocation and stuff.
Hmm.
That's a good question.
I can talk to someone here and just see how much work that would entail and whether or not someone here could get some release time to work on that.
What exactly are you thinking that they would design? Like,
well, in my head, I'm thinking of writing, I guess it would be like a Java applet that would, like, you'd have a list of, and I don't know if it would be like, you know, you'd actually be writing a computer program inside this, but it would basically give you all the different pieces. You'd have, like, this component that's a random number generator that students could invoke. And it would be a lot like, if you pull out a TI-83, then you can, it has a random number generator mm-hmm. function, and you just say, pick me a random number between 1 and 100, and it does that. So, like, this program would have a command that would let you do that. And it would have some way of assigning random numbers or some way to let you assign random numbers to particular outcomes. So, like, you'd have to build it would let you build a table where you could say, you know, these 10 numbers get mapped to this outcome. And then it would have to have some way of aggregating the results, either with an average or with another table. But it seems, and then you'd have to have a way of repeating this process over and over and aggregating the aggregates. But based on my very little experience programming, it seems like doing that stuff wouldn't be too hard.
Is there something already out there that, like, does Fathom have that as a potential, or Tinkerplots?
That's a good question.
Because, I mean, they're supposed to be, those programs are supposed to be sort of more dynamic and educationally focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's something that could be done in one of those. I could investigate Fathom and Tinkerplots. I have talked with Cliff Canold a couple times already about Tinkerplots, so I could email him.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
All right, I'll investigate that for those two.
Yeah. So that seems like before we get into the details of phases beyond three, we should get a sense of what all the different types of technology are out there. So, like, maybe, you know, Stacey, if there's something with R that you could find where there is a higher level, either a graphical interface or something that would let people generate data and run simulations that way.
Yeah. I was actually kind of just going through different statistical software packages, like their capabilities and incapabilities, because I'll be at Clark next year, and they don't have R, although I could just make them use R, but it seems like everyone uses SPSS there, and then people use Excel, and, like, if I'm going to make a switch to a different programming language, I want to make sure it's a good one,
right.
I guess. But it seems like, too, that the stat software packages are getting more kind of user-friendly, and R is trying to do that as well.
Yeah.
I haven't used SPSS, so I don't know if that would hold any.
Nor Stata, which the economics department here uses Stata. But it's crazy how many stats packages are out there. Like, you look up just on Wikipedia the list of statistical software packages, and it's huge.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. So would it be good for us to, at this point, proceed, assuming that we'll be able to find or create the type of technology that would let us do a phase 3.5 or a phase 4?
Yeah. I like having the middle, so I liked Stacy's phase in between the 3 and 4,
mm-hmm.
where the students are maybe putting on paper before they even go to the computer.
Yeah.
Writing out the process and what their algorithm is for what they would want to tell the computer to do.
Yeah.
And then I would think that as a class you would sort of refine that and then go to the computer
yeah.
after that with sort of a classroom set of classroom sort of list of the process or commands.
Yeah. I taught, there's a book by Sheldon Ross called Simulation that I used for a class a few years back. And he does that in his book where he says, okay, let's just write down what the computer is going to do in kind of a computer thinking way. And then from there, go to the computer. And I think it helps a lot. Because then the just thinking about that and not like, what do I type here and what's the syntax and errors and things. So they have the whole idea of what the program is going to do and what the steps of the program would do before they try to program it.
Good.
Now, I'm trying to think back of a course that I took 1,000 years ago that we did something along those lines, but I think it was mostly that, you know, we were trying to set it up, and we also did not worry about, you know, I was the student at this point. We didn't worry about the syntax itself because we weren't computer science people. You know, I mean, we were faking it as best we could.
Yeah.
Okay, and how about, what do people think of the first three phases? Are these things, do we need more phases, or do we need this many phases, and are these phases things that we'll want to do? I guess keeping in mind, do we have like some upper time limit on how long we want this teaching experiment to take?
That's a good question. It seems like each of these phases that you have here, I mean, especially the two hands-on ones, that could be like 2 weeks of class right there.
Yeah. And it probably depends in large part on how many questions we ask them along the way.
Right. And then how much time we spend sort of summarizing and or reflecting on each sort of phase or activity, like as a class.
So yeah, I was going to mention, I have a stat class available for use this summer if we wanted to try test out some things this summer.
That would be really good.
Yeah, and it would also motivate us to get it done before.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so yeah, the good news is it's the second summer session, so it's essentially June 28th or something like that is when it would start. But there is the matter of, okay, I do have a syllabus that I need to finish. It's a standard intro stat course, or at least, you know, a relatively standard intro stat course. But, you know, I'm certain... You know, I don't know. I don't think I'd need to get approval if we were just doing some sort of pilot program of some kind.
No, I think it would be really valuable for us to just see how students react to some of our ideas.
Yeah.
And if it's just informing us, then we don't need any human subject.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I won't have an intro stat class until the spring. I'll be teaching calculus in the fall. And probability for the math majors. Although I could probably try some of the stuff in the upper level probability course too, just to see kind of the different reactions.
Yeah, and as it stands, like, so right now I'm teaching a statistics for engineers. So if we had anything before the end of this quarter, I could always pilot with that group, but they should be at a more advanced level than our intro stat students. And then I think in the fall I teach a statistics for high school teachers course. And that is also a good group because some of them really have no stats background whatsoever. So I could certainly pilot and or do the teaching experiment with that group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the fall, I'm teaching it's a sophomore. Well, I think I've emailed all of you for help finding a textbook. But I have complete freedom in my stats class. Like, it's for math majors, but none of them have ever had statistics before, so it's basically still a regular intro stats, except they're not afraid of, like, sigmas and
mm-hmm.
U's and summations and things like that.
Does it require a calculus?
It has calculus as a prerequisite, although very little calculus is actually used along
yeah.
the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the nice thing is that there's no fixed syllabus, so I can do whatever I want, and I can take as long as we would like if we do want to spend several weeks on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I can, although I'm not slated to teach any intro stats courses in the fall, or actually I think all of next year, other than the Stats for Teachers class, there are a number of grad students here who teach, and then a few other faculty who I think would be interested, so that we could still conduct a teaching experiment in those classes. They would be open to
yeah.
going through that.
Hmm.
Cool. All right. Okay, so, and so I guess as a follow-up, do we think we need all of these phases?
Well,
I like
all of them, maybe not 2 weeks on every one of them, but we definitely need those ideas, like, I guess I like the order of the ideas of how the students would be learning the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's important, too, because, I mean, I think one of the pieces to our research is this idea of, like, I feel like if we get rid of phases, then we're losing some of the aspects in our goals that we've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, okay, so this might not be what you can normally do in a class. Like, some of this might take longer than we normally spend on these ideas, but I think part of our research is not trying to condense this all into a doable time frame at this point, as much as seeing what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think, like, the phase one, getting students used to simulation and thinking about probability and a frequentist notion, and then moving on to building the sampling distributions, and then the random number generators, and then maybe writing out what they would tell a computer, and then actually going to the computer, make a lot of sense for fitting with our research goals and getting a better, more detailed look at what students can do and how they develop some of these ideas through this process.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. And are there any other phases that we're missing? Right, so we have now phase 3.5, which I think we have a consensus that this would be we hypothesized that it would be a very useful thing to do. Are there any other phases that students should be going through?
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. And this might actually be something where we just wait until we pilot test this stuff. And
yeah.
then, like, if Sean, if you're running this summer,
mm-hmm.
and you get, like, you go from phase two to phase three, and all of a sudden, like, the class explodes, and we'll know that there should have been something between phase two and phase three.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah, the nice part is the group of students that I'll have this summer will more closely resemble your students, because in the summer they tend to be the four-year school students. On the other hand, though, I am doing the whole course in 5 weeks. So there is that extra pushback of, okay, we're smashing the whole course into 3 hours a day, 4 days a week, for 5 weeks.
Yeah. That might be a good layout, because maybe in that case, like, each phase could take 1 day.
Yeah, so yeah, I'll be able to, I think I'll have a lot easier time working things in because, you know, if an experiment, if we're doing something in class and now it takes 75 minutes or it takes 85 minutes, well, in a 3-hour class, I can work that in a lot easier than, oh, you know what, the class ends at in 45 minutes, we need to stop and restart.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds good. So is the next step just figuring out what each of these phases would really look like and what questions we want to ask along the way?
Yeah. And then I think the notion of, like, your idea from last time about representation and what we want to include, that would be working towards that idea as well.
Yeah. And that's something where hopefully in the near future I will get to sort of condensing all the information I have about representation and writing something up. Yeah, I'll work on that. But I don't know if anyone had a chance to look through some of the activities that I sent around. And these were examples of things that my guess is if they're not great in their current form, they might be modifiable to be decent or usable by us. I don't know if anyone had a chance to look at any of them.
I looked at a few. I looked at the the designing an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the platypus activity, it seemed like designing the elevator, since you were getting at sampling distributions, the central limit theorem was maybe more of a phase two.
Yeah. And that one, that was actually my model in my head for what phase three might look like, because there's so much data that the way I ran it in class, I gave students a sheet with roughly 1,000 data points on it, and then they use a calculator to pick out the data points, and then they'd have to record the weights and average them and do stuff like that.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. So I could see that as a phase three so something a little bit smaller for the phase two, or not such a large data set for them.
Yeah. And that was the issue with the elevators, which... And the elevator data is actually really interesting. If you pull out the full data set and you get the height and weight, there's two very distinct clusters of height and weight in the U.S. population, which I've been unable to explain.
Hmm.
But basically, there's one curve that it's pretty linear at first, and then it tapers off, and that's all. That's what you'd think height and weight would normally do. They should be pretty closely tied together, and then you have a bunch of really heavy people who aren't particularly tall. But then if you look below this huge cluster of people, there's another very distinct cluster that are heavy but short.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, the students all got a laugh out of that.
You can bring in the data on obesity in the United States that way.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, all of these, the elevators is one I've used in class. The platypus I used in class this year. Then there's the lottery one, which.
Why don't I? Sorry, I don't see this one for platypus. So elevator, right. Lottery, okay. Could this have been just one that I needed to delete? I tried saving everything, and maybe I missed one before I deleted the email?
Could be. Let me make sure I actually sent this one out.
I got the platypus, I think, that came.
Yeah, I have it, too.
Okay, all right. So
one of them I couldn't open, but it wasn't the platypus.
All right, then maybe it's me.
Yeah, so, and I guess, well, where should we go at this point? There are some ideas here. There's the paper that I sent around in which the lit review, I've done a lit review for it and found a lot of examples of sampling activities, although I don't think many of them were really about simulation.
How did you find that each of those activities went when you use them in class? And, did you make modifications to the ones you sent us based on any responses from class, or were they given in any kind of order?
So this year, I'm trying to think, when did I do these? The platypus one I used both in class, and then I did a professional development for high school teachers in which I used it. And I think everyone seemed pretty engaged in the activity, and the only downside was that, perhaps not surprisingly, I don't think my students developed a deep understanding of the central limit theorem just based on the platypus activity, which I don't really expect them to do, because I think it was just like a day and a half in class.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think someone earlier suggested that each of these phases might take a couple of days to really do well, and I would agree with that, because depending on how much of the actual, like, grunt work you want to do in class, that can take a fair bit of class time,
mm-hmm.
and then it'll take a little, like, you want them to reflect a little bit at home, and then you want everyone to discuss it, and then maybe you want some more reflection. And so, you know, we're looking at 2 to 3 days, I think, to do the type of thing we'd like to do.
Per phase, you're saying?
Yeah, per phase. And also, this the stuff that I did was not designed to introduce ideas of probability. So if we want some of our earlier stuff to introduce those ideas, then it might take even longer to have the good discussions.
And how much did you find, like, in terms of, like, how hands-off were you? Were you fairly leading with students if they were having trouble getting going? Or was that not even an issue?
That wasn't too much of an issue as far as, like, implementing the activity itself. Basically the way it was set up, the directions were pretty clear. And part of it, at least for the platypus one, I think, it used to be context-free. This semester I'm teaching statistics for biologists, which is why I did the platypus thing, and they all got pretty excited about it. So I think that helped a lot in that they were, like, actually thinking of it as actually going out and collecting platypus eggs.
Oh, cool. So they were into...
Yeah. They told me that it was all messed up. They were like, you can't have brood sizes that are that large. I'm like, well, just believe it, please. So that's something where this specific activity might, or the context might not be particularly relevant for some groups, and that might have an impact on sort of how efficiently and productively they go through it.
Right.
And as I'm thinking about this, a related question, and this is one that perhaps we can't answer until we really have our research framework clearly laid out, but how often and by what mechanism will we be collecting data?
Well, it seems like we have it seems like there are a lot of options. Like, we could be videotaping the teaching experiment. So every class we would conduct videotapes and then collect any written work that students have. So we would have all that data. And we could be doing interviews with subsets of the class.
Yeah.
And
but
even,
I
mean, this could be complicated if we want to collect videotape of the classroom teaching episodes,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that do we want, like, multiple cameras in there that are focused on different groups so that we can catch more detailed interaction in specific groups, or whole class sort of data and interaction. And then it seems like we're probably going to need help. Like, we're going to need to pull in grad students or assistants or something,
yeah.
to, like, help videotape for us.
Hmm.
Yeah, I feel like the interviews and videotapes would give us the best types of data to analyze, along with students' written work. Particularly, like, the idea of videotaping groups in action.
Yeah.
Right, because it seems to me like there's always this concern about post hoc explanations of student thinking, where, like, you have students come in and they tell you what they were thinking, and they're, you know, certainly their memories of what they were thinking is not always perfectly accurate. But if you can, like, sort of watch them as things unfold, as long as they're not too conscious of the camera, then it seems to me that they would pick up some useful information.
Yeah, and then maybe even have some sort of final interview with groups of students or something like that if they've been working in, you know, just to kind of see where they are at the end, like,
yeah.
or if, like, interviews where they're reflecting on what they've done.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of having, like, during the teaching experiment, having maybe multiple cameras on different groups in the class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And so that's something, I don't know what everyone's resource access is. I could drum up some undergraduate help, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think me too.
And I guess as Sean might...
Yeah, but so it's like, yeah, it's like resources. interesting. Yeah, that's where I'm thinking. It's like, you know, I mean, the idea of being able to... I know there are ways in some of our classrooms where I can record what I am saying, but it would be, you could hear the interactions, but you wouldn't be able to see anything.
Right. And I don't know what everyone's class setup is, because potentially one thing that you could do is if you had, if we were just interested in videotaping one group from each class, if you could somehow just get a fixed video camera and make sure that the group you're recording stays roughly within video
mm-hmm.
shot and earshot of it. Because
mm-hmm.
I would think, depending on how we want to implement these, that we would get more useful data from the small group conversations than from the class as a whole, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about, here's a proposal for action items for the relatively near future. So we need to flesh out these different phases, and I think it might help if we picked out some generic sampling activities or simulation activities. And these are things, like, if you look at the activities I sent, pretty much all of them, or a bunch of them, you can put different cover stories on them.
Yeah.
But it's all like, we used decks of cards and bags of bingo chips and maybe dice. So it's all pretty cheap stuff, and you can just say, oh, the blue bingo chips represent this or that. And so maybe the thing to do is try to sketch examples of activities we would use in each phase, and then sort of sketch how we would like to implement the activities, just saying, like, you know, devote a half an hour to having students actually collect their data and trying to summarize it, and then 20 minutes to class discussion in which the instructor makes a histogram of their data for them, something like that. And maybe sketch out some questions that we want to be asking of our students along the way. And then as we're doing that, trying to think of what are the key ideas that we're to keep in mind, what are the key ideas that we're trying to get at through these activities, and also what sort of cognitive development or what sort of representations might students be using or constructing as they go through them. And I'm not quite sure how to split up the work for that.
Well, we could potentially each take a phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm assuming that at some point we would want to share, and we need to see what each other is doing just so.
There's continuity.
Yeah, there's enough continuity.
Yeah.
But I think that actually might be really good, because that way, like, we'll each come up with our vision of how they might be implemented and sort of what are the key markers or the signposts along the way that we should make sure we hit. And then if we see what we each think of those individually, then I'll have a much better idea of whether or not the way I was thinking of it seems productive, and maybe I'm assuming everyone else will have some really good things that I should be incorporating into whichever phase I was working on.
Yeah, I'll take phase 4 and 3.5,
3.54.
That's awesome.
And I could work. I guess I don't really have a preference. Does anyone else have preferences for their phases?
I don't have a preference. I'm fine with whatever.
So yeah, I don't either. So I think I have something. Well, I think there's something that I use with simulation stuff already in phase 1. So maybe I should expand that one out, or maybe I should do 2. Now, let me do 1.
Okay.
You want to take 1, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Jen, any phase 2, phase 3 preference?
I can take phase 2.
Okay.
You already seem to have, well, I think you had some stuff for both, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'll do phase 3.
Okay.
And certainly, if everyone wants to take a look at the things that I sent, if any of those sound promising, feel free to adapt those. And there's also one of the things I sent was also the lottery thing. That has examples of worksheets that I've used in class and a list of questions that I've posed to students. And the goals for the activity were different than what we're doing. But you can, if anyone likes any of those worksheets or aspects of them or the questions, then certainly feel free to grab.
Okay,
cool. And so that gives us our action items. But should we also be wondering if we should be continuing to flesh out our paper or any other action items that folks can think of that seem pressing?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should. I can get in touch with Bob and see what we actually need to be doing for May 11th.
That seems like a good plan.
And I can just email you all and let you know what he says.
Okay. When do you want to schedule our next conference call? I have to teach in like 1 minute. So.
Okay.
It looks like the 7th of May is 4 weeks from today.
Yep.
Friday.
That's good for me.
Yes. Well, I'll make it work. I was going to say we're supposed to, because it's the last day of classes, we do honors convocation then. But you know what? Nobody will notice I'm not there.
Okay.
If you want to, we could do a different date too.
No. I mean, it's not a, I can make it work.
Okay. So we're doing May 7th. Noon Eastern?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right.
And I'll get in touch with Bob and I'll let you all know if we need to do anything by the 11th.
And
I'll
the minutes out soon as well.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
All right, thanks. Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Yep. everybody.
Yep. Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.